The wild imagination of director Terry Gilliam returns to the big screen next weekend with his new film, The Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus. The movie tells a story of a small acting troupe that travels through London performing from a dilapidated portable stage. The centerpiece of the performance is an imaginarium. It's a mirror that can transport anyone from the audience into an imaginary world. But the show itself has fallen on hard times, and audiences are thin. That is, until a somewhat smarmy character named Tony Shepherd joins up and offers some marketing strategies.
You know, forgive me, but I have a couple of solutions to your problems. One, I was thinking of, you know, changing the style of the show. And two, I would change the audience, perhaps.
Change?
Yeah. You know, but in my opinion, I'd change both. But, you know, that's just me.
That's the voice of Heath Ledger. The Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus turned out to be his last film. 3 days after the first round of filming wrapped, Heath Ledger died.
I don't think in the entire history of motion pictures anything like this has actually happened, where the lead actor dies literally in the middle of production, and we managed to get three A-list actors to come in and continue his part.
That's director Terry Gilliam, and as he mentioned, three A-list actors, Johnny Depp, Jude Law, and Colin Farrell, all stepped in to play little bits of Heath Ledger's role that were incomplete at the time of his death, the parts that took place inside the mirror, the Imaginarium. And to make it work, Terry Gilliam came up with a rather ingenious solution.
We had already established in the script the principle that if you go through the mirror with somebody else, their imagination may be stronger than yours and you become what they want you to be. And with a bit of fiddling, a few bits of dialogue, I just made that clearer. And so the initial one is this lady who looks, and it's Johnny, and she says, I always dreamed you would look like this. And it works. And once the audience accepted that first change, it just flowed after that. It was great.
How did those actors agree to do this? Did they reach out to you after Heath Ledger's death?
No, I mean, the first one was Johnny, because Johnny was a very close friend, and he was a close friend of Heath's as well, and I called him a day or two after Heath died, and just commiserating. And I said, I don't know what I'm going to do. Am I just close it down? I really don't know. And he says, well, whatever you decide to do, I'm there. And then I started calling other actors who were close friends of Heath's, because I wanted to keep this in the family. And Colin and Jude, it was possible that we could shift our schedules and they could shift theirs a bit, and they could be in the film. And so that's what happened. It actually was an incredible dance between our schedule and their three schedules. And in fact, in the end, Johnny was finally available because Michael Mann's film, Public Enemy, had, at the very last moment, been delayed 1 week, and we got Johnny.
For a day and a half, I read.
Day and 3.5 hours.
How close did that tragedy come to derailing this entire project?
When Heath died, I mean, the first reaction was I was just pulling the plug on the whole thing. I mean, personally devastated. I surround myself with people who don't listen to me. And one of them was my daughter, who was one of the producers, and she just kept kicking me until I got up off the floor and said, okay, we'll find a solution to this thing. What was interesting about it was that almost everything that I had to do to salvage the film improved the film. That's what was strange about it. One scene I couldn't do, and we don't need it. Another scene I shifted from this side of the mirror to the Imaginarium side of the mirror, and it works better. I said that in some ways Heath was co-directing this film posthumously because he didn't let me do certain things that I'd originally planned to do, and all of them were for the better.
I was struck at watching this film at how you managed to make modern-day London look Dickensian. Many parts of this film are take place on the streets of London, in the city of London, the banking financial center, and it looks like something out of the 19th century. How did you do that?
Well, it's all there. And Dickens has always been, I think, central to my view of London, and I seem to just search out those areas that remind me of that time. I mean, I think that's what I do when I go around London, even now having lived there for 42 years. I just focus on the bits that create the city that I would like to be living in, not the one that actually is there.
My guest is film director Terry Gilliam. His latest is The Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus. While I was watching this film in a screening, I was thinking, you know, nothing quite looks like a Terry Gilliam film. I mean, you can see it very clearly. There is such a stamp on all of your films, from Brazil in 1985 to The Adventures of Baron Munchausen to this film, of course. How do you map out the way you're going to make a film before you start? How do you even conceive of it?
It's just natural. It's what I do. I was born with whatever this talent or mutation is. I don't know what it is. I mean, it's funny because everybody says, oh, it's immediate what a Terry Gilliam film looks like. And I don't know what you're talking about, frankly.
I've read, Terry Gilliam, that in 2006, when you sort of stumbled across the idea for this film, Dr. Parnassus, that you had hit a kind of wall in your career. What was going on?
Oh, I don't know if I keep hitting walls, I think, is what I do. It just felt things weren't working well. The last couple of films hadn't done particular business. Actually, what's interesting, even more depressing, was the last film I did before Parnassus was Tideland. Mm. That was supposed to be a provocative film. I thought I'd get some very loud dialogue, arguments about certain things, about the victimization of children, blah, blah, blah. And nothing happened. That was the depressing thing. That it was like the people who hated the film didn't talk about it. It didn't exist. And I thought, well, what am I doing? Films don't even have the power to provoke and anger people anymore. And I think that's what was depressing me.
I mean, a lot of people probably assume, well, Terry Gilliam is a famous director. He doesn't need critical acclaim or feedback. Is that true? I mean, do you need feedback?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm just a tart. I want to please people. I want to show off in front of as many people as possible.
Some critics have already said this film, Parnassus, is one of your best in years. Do you agree?
Yep. It's right there at the top, I think. I'm really proud of it. I don't normally say this about my films, but this one I actually can openly say I think it's a wonderful film. What's interesting for me is that I get critics who watch the film, and it's like they're watching a foreign language. They don't understand a single thing about it. They come out saying, there's nothing there. And I find that extraordinary, and it's never changed over the years. They want their films to be neatly packaged with a nice narrative that tells you exactly where it's going all the time. I fight that because I suppose I'm still trying to make movies for myself when I was a kid, and I was constantly surprised by what was going to happen next. People then say, oh, it's incomprehensible. It's only because they don't have the imagination of children anymore.
Terry Gilliam is the director and co-writer of the new film, The Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus. It opens on Friday. Terry Gilliam, thank you so much.
Thank you.